You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the equine network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Wednesday, May 7th, episode 3686, brought to you today by Stateline Tack and Poseidon Animal Health. Good morning, horse people.
Ah, Wednesday, the day we cover Glenn's favorite topic, horse health. And Jamie makes you feel better about yourself with the latest weird news from around the world. Happy Wednesday.
Well, we have a fun show planned for you today. We have Scott Beckstead. He's coming back with us. We had him on one of the Equine Affair shows while we were in Ohio, and he had a booth right down from us, and he's with the Wild Horse Refuge. It's a fascinating place, and we're kind of working with them to highlight the Mustang. And Jamie, I wanted you to meet him because you didn't get to meet him and he's just a fascinating dude, and what they do such great work. So we're going to talk about that. And then Jessica from Spalding Labs is going to come back, and she's going to answer listener questions about fly predators because it's time to get them ordered. And I don't know about you, but our flies are bad. And we have some mighty weird news as well. And in the Auditor Post show, we're going to talk about non-horse people and their view of the Kentucky Derby. Jamie, listen to another podcast and has some comments. So we're going to talk about that in the post show.
It's so bad.
Speaking of the Kentucky Derby, Sovereignty, winner of the Kentucky Derby, will not run in the Preakness. It's going to be pointed towards Belmont Stakes, which has caused, Belmont just said it's too soon, right? So he had a tough run. It's too soon. I'm not going to do it. And he's been known for being conservative that way anyway. This will mark the third time in the last seven runnings that the victor did not move to the Preakness. So this has caused a whole controversy online with people saying they should change the Triple Crown and there should be 4 weeks between each one. Not just two.
I think there used to be like 5 days in between them.
Yes.
Forever ago.
I could argue in court both sides of that. So right now there's 2 weeks between the first two. And then there's 4 weeks, I think, between the second and third. So, you know, I could argue both sides of that. One, this makes two Triple Crown winners. You have to be that good to win the Triple Crown.
If you remember, it's 2 weeks and then 3 weeks. And if you remember California Chrome's owner, when California Chrome did not win the Belmont, he goes on record, there's never going to be another Triple Crown winner. It's never going to happen. Mark my words. And he gives this whole interview about how ridiculous and tough it is. And that was 2014. And 2015, American Pharoah won. And then 2019, Justify won. So, like, it is possible. And these are for certain super horses. And it's
what it's meant to be, right? It's meant to be you do the impossible.
For super horses. Yeah. It's the impossible. I mean, that's why there's so few of them for all these years. But I love, like, Mott taking his time, being like, you know, the horse isn't ready. On the same token, Dwayne Lucas has said Caldera is not going to run in the Preakness. By the way, he's kind of being pointed towards the Preakness. Caldera is my racehorse horse that a lot of our listeners own shares of. And he decided he's going to go send him to a farm and give him a couple weeks off. So that is the Dwayne Lucas coach kind of method. He looks at each individual horse and he's like, this one needs to go to the farm and get some turnout. And so Sweet Angel Caldera is going to go to the farm and get some turnout. So that's exciting.
And we shouldn't, and Sovereignty apparently is going to take a little break here too. And that shouldn't be a problem. We should be happy about that, right? Because the trainers are doing the right thing by the horse. So
absolutely. That is what it's all about. Now, I did want to tell you that I may have purchased shares in another horse, Glenn.
And I did see that Clark kind of put you up to
so. Yeah, he's my dealer. So this is actually, Chad Brown is going to be the trainer of this. And I'm trying to see, I don't even know if there are shares left, but it is a colt by Puka, last year's colt. And Puka is the mare. She's by Big Brown and she is a super mare. And she is the mother of Dornock. She's the mother of Mage. She's the mother of Bayzet. I mean, all of her babies run in the Kentucky Derby and like win. Or like when the Belmont, it's amazing. So they did have, I don't know if they have shares available. Let me see. At this moment, oh yes, there's a few more shares of Puka 24. So you can go in there and then, and that's kind of a longer term prospect, right?
Because
he was born in 24. So it's just a year now. So, I mean, you know, nothing about horses is fast. That's for dang sure. So, but it's cool that Chad Brown will be the trainer too. So that's exciting. I love him.
And how many does this make now?
But listen, don't be rude. Don't talk to me about how many horses I own. It's none of your business. Daily Winnie's.
Mary Kitzmiller, every time I ask her how many animals she has, I get that same answer. Don't be rude.
Oh, really?
It's like asking it's like asking a Texan how many acres they own. Same thing.
It's like saying to oh, congratulations on your baby. Are you pregnant? And then they're like, I'm not pregnant. It's like that level rude, okay?
No auditor birthdays today, believe it or not, but we do have a brand new auditor named Alicia. Alicia, thank you so much for joining the party and for supporting the Horse Radio Network. We appreciate it. You can search for HRN Auditors on Facebook and ask to join there, and then you can join the party that goes on in there. Also, I wanted to give a thank you to the focus group that's currently going. We have a focus group made up of auditors that come on in every episode we do here on Horses in the Morning, and they are dedicated group, and it takes a lot of work, and I appreciate you guys greatly. I read every post, and I know Jamie does too. So
I don't read any of them. Are you kidding me?
but we read all the comments. I know Ashley tunes in there too. So we do appreciate you doing that and taking the time to do that.
All right. I'm out. I'm out on that. Oh gosh, my dear husband with his stupid boat. So it's rained so much that he moved the boat and went to take it to the lake, and the lake is closed because we've had so much rain here in Oklahoma. So he brought it back and parked it. Now where he parks the boat is in what I call, well, it's my restroom area. Like it's like a little covered area, and there didn't used to be a boat in it. So now I have to cram between the wall and the boat to like squat and do my, you know, just go. I pee outside. Everybody, we're all horse people. We pee outside. That's just, it's too much work to go to the bathroom. So anyway, there's the boat and then the wall. And so I kind of have to now, because his big jerk face boat's in my bathroom, I have to like squish down between the wall and the boat.
You do this.
Yeah, I let him know because of this. So I was in the, and so I'm, I, it's kind of like the, you, we used to keep hay in it. It's like a little indoor, like shed kind of thing. And so I always am very cautious when I go in here, because if you haven't seen 1883, somebody gets bit in the butt by a snake when they're going to be. So I'm like, it's a core memory now. And so now every time I squat to pee outside, I have to like check it where I'm going to squat and make sure there's no snake. So I'm holding, this is how it's so awkward. My back is against the wall. I'm holding on to the stupid boat trailer and I'm squatting on pee and I've looked, there's no snakes. And I'm going and I heard something. And I heard a little like thunk against the metal. And I looked, Glenn. And about 2 feet to my right was about a 5 foot long black snake with stripes down it, yellow stripes. You have never seen a woman jump up as fast as I did, shimmy out from between the wall and the boat trailer, leap forward, pants completely down, mind you, and run the opposite direction, screaming. Which, of course, my little friend Anna's in the barn, and she comes running out. What's wrong? And I'm like, don't look! Don't look! My pants are on my ankles, and I'm running. Because, I'm sorry, when you go pee, you don't expect a 5 foot long. I'm like, look! I look first, Glenn. Well, let me tell you, the boat trailer bathroom area is off limits from now on. We're done. I'm going to have to relocate my usual potty spot, okay? It's right next to my cross ties.
You can have a bathroom foot in, you know, right?
Oh, but what? We're gonna have to now. That's it.
There's your excuse to get Chad to put in a bathroom. Right there.
Oh my God. You cannot believe how scary that was.
Okay, that is funny.
I tell that story. My legs are numb.
If only we had that video, we could have made $1 million on that video.
Oh God, it was awful. So yes, I did tell Chad, I'm like, you're a jerk. You stirred up the snakes by parking your boat in my bathroom. I don't have any room to go anymore now. To cram us up against the wall. There's a stupid snake living there. I can't go anymore now. You're right. It should cost him thousands of dollars. So I'm getting a bathroom in the barn. We're putting a septic tank in. That's it, Chad.
That's it. $5,000 septic tank because of the 2-foot snake.
It was like 4 feet long, Glenn.
Yeah. It's always about half of what they say when it comes to snakes.
It was like, it was the size of the Loch Ness Monster, and I'm lucky to be alive. It was like 47
head,
feet
and it was
long.
All striped. And
it was like cobra head up hissing at me, and it like lunged at me and tried to bite me on the butt. We've all seen the 1883, okay? We know what happens to those people that peed next to the water, okay?
Normally it's, well, I'm not going to go there. That was
just
very funny.
Just let it go.
All right. Talk about the movement and then we'll get to our guest.
Oh my gosh, you guys, the movement is coming up. I'm so excited. The movement 2025, basically what this is Debbie Laux and Monty Roberts put together this awesome weekend of like presenters and horse trainers and artists and music. And it's really, really, really a beautiful weekend. It's going to be June 20th through the 22nd. There are only 50 tickets available. I don't know how many are left, but obviously there's a few left if we're sitting here talking about it. But it's a 3-day experience this year of trust transformation and the connection between horses and humans. And so it's going to be Monty and me. And you can see typically Monty just tells me what to do and, you know, yells at me in a very peaceful way. It tells me what to do. And so we train, Monty and I'll train some Mustangs together. We'll do anything people want to see, like how you can kind of make a connection with a horse, like teaching it to come to the mounting block and doing things, you know. It's not about causing a horse to do something. It's about causing a horse to want to do something. And that's kind of some of the stuff we demonstrate. Dr. Siemens, you know, Dr. Siemens from the show.
I met him at Equine Affair.
Well, he's going to be at the movement this year.
Yeah, I saw him at Equine
Affair.
As well as,
are you sitting down? Tad Coffin, the first human, the first American to ever win gold in eventing. Tad Coffin, going to be there. He's the one who invented the Theratree. He's going to be there with his wife, who's an artist. And so Kelly, his wife, Kelly Coffin, and Pat Roberts, Monty's wife, are going to do like an art exhibit thing. Jared Rogerson is going to be there with his Friday night concert. And it's like a wine and cheese night. And so we just sit there and watch Jared be adorable and sing cowboy songs. A woman named Bianca Zabel, it does somatic trauma therapy with horses. There's demos, learning, music, healing, horsemanship, all the things. So it's really, really fun. This is my like millionth year in a row. So definitely check it out. You can go to MontyRoberts.com to look for tickets.
And if you're tired of tack that breaks the bank, try on over to StatelineTack.com to discover Stable Steels. Amazing deals on top brands you and your horse will love. But hurry, these steels won't last forever. Find your next stable essential for less. Shop Stable Steels at StatelineTack.com. There's a lot of
That's
S's
hard.
In this commercial. A lot of S's. Don't forget, we also have a coupon code. It's HRN. You get 30% off any order over $129. Enter the coupon code HRN at checkout, and it'll show you which products apply, because some that are already severely discounted or manufacturer restrictions won't be applied, but you'll be able to tell before you hit the buy button. Just put HRN coupon code in and do that. Well, we're excited to be working with Wild Horse Refuge in Colorado to highlight the Mustangs. And Scott, you were on our show a couple weeks back at Equine Affair, a month ago now, and we really appreciate you coming back on to join us to talk about Mustangs. First of all, where is Wild Horse Refuge for the people who didn't hear that show, and what do you guys do?
Yeah, thanks, Glenn, and good morning, and very grateful for the opportunity to come onto the show again and talk. So the Wild Horse Refuge is located in Moffat County up here in the northwestern corner of Colorado. We are located about 45 minutes west of Steamboat Springs. The nearest town is Craig, Colorado, and the address here is actually a Craig, Colorado address. But we are out here on 30,000 acres where we are letting wild horses just run free.
So a small place up there in Colorado.
Yeah, that's right. Just a nitty bitty little spot.
Yeah. How many horses do you have running free?
Right now, we have just under 250 horses. We recently went to an adoption event in Greeley, Colorado, and this is, I think, a good example to show your audience sort of what we do. We went to a BLM wild horse adoption event in Greeley, Colorado, and there were horses available for adoption. And it turned out that 15 of those horses didn't receive any bids. And so rather than have those horses be sent to government holding at taxpayer expense, the Bureau of Land Management transferred those horses to us and our parent organization, the Wild Animal Sanctuary. And we brought those 15 horses, all of them mares, to the Wild Horse Refuge, and they are now out being wild again. And that's really our mission. Our mission is to make sure that those horses that don't get adopted, as long as they are Colorado born, we take them from the Bureau of Land Management and we give them a new life, wild and free, out on our 30,000 acres.
Do you guys do healthcare?
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me do a follow-up real quick, because you said Colorado-born. I know that, like, I work with a lot of thoroughbred rescues here in Oklahoma, and if they are Oklahoma-bred, there is, like, it's better for the rescue as far as financials go. So is that kind of the situation with having to have a Colorado-bred?
Yeah, so the Wild Horse Refuge is dedicated to wild horses that were born in Colorado and that were removed from their herd management area by the Bureau of Land Management. It's not really an issue, a financial or tax issue. It's just that we would easily be overrun if we took horses from all the other states. We do have another sanctuary facility down in the southeastern corner of Colorado, the Wild Animal Refuge. That's 10,000 acres, and the largest portion of that is dedicated to wild horses from other states. So we have horses from Arizona. We have horses that were pulled out of a kill pen in Oklahoma, all wild horses, but they were brought to that facility and they are from other states. So here at the Wild Horse Refuge here in the northwestern corner, we accept Colorado-born wild horses.
How do you guys handle healthcare and stuff like that?
You know, this is one of the most kind of unique and I think exciting features of the Wild Horse Refuge and our operation. We take a very hands-off approach to the wild horses to the fullest extent necessary. But, you know, in those instances where a horse is hurt or sick, we actually do the vet care as much as possible out on the range. So, you know, we would go out onto the range. If there's a horse that's hurt, we would use a tranquilizer gun to get the horse down, and the horse gets doctored out there on the range and then turn back out. And we've had two horses with injuries that required vet care, and that's basically what we did. And those horses are healed up great and are doing great.
Why do horses that are wild on the range get hurt a hell of a lot less than our horses that we pamper?
Right?
We have vet bills.
You know, a lot of it, I think, these Mustangs are so tough and so resilient, and they just know, you know, especially because they were born and grew up in the wild, they just know how to avoid the kind of hazards that, you know, that tend to hurt the domestic horses. And, you know, it's always amazing to me to see, you know, a group of our horses just racing for the sheer joy of running across really rugged ground. And you're just like, man, how do they not miss a step? How do they not stumble? How do they not break a leg? But that's the Mustang for you. That's just how they're built. And they really are amazing in how tough they are and how well they navigate a wild landscape.
So you've got 15 brand new mares that you just brought in, and I'm assuming they mingle with all the herd. Okay. So, like, the question is, birth control, is there? What do you do? How's that work?
These are non-reproducing horses, because we take horses from the Bureau of Land Management, and they geld all of the stallions and colts when they bring them in from the roundups. So all of the horses that we've taken in from the Bureau of Land Management, all of the male horses are geldings. Now, having said that, You know, we still see a lot of stallion behaviors out there. These guys, you know, they don't have the knockdown, drag out fights that you see out on, you know, in the wild between, you know, stallions that are fighting over mares and so forth. It's more like friendly sparring. There's two stallions. We've got a great big Palomino stallion named Kahlua, and one of his band members is a little black Mustang named Punky. And even though they're mismatched physically, they are constantly sparring, and it's just fun to watch because they're not serious about it. They're just, you know, messing around and sort of roughhousing. But you know, you will see the male horses. You'll see them snaking their bands, you know, to keep them separate from the other bands. And, you know, these bands are really cohesive and tight knit. They all stay together. Every now and then, you know, you'll see, you know, two or three bands come together. Just last week we were out, and actually there were, I think, three or four bands that had come together, and there was like 100 horses just spread out across the hillside. It was an amazing sight. But
when you remove testosterone from men, peace on earth reigns.
I don't know. I was just going to say that playing happens with our horses here too. You know, they carry on the same way. So yeah, I think
horses. That goes to show you that people who they fight that you got to keep them wild and keep them all this. No. They're still horses. Like my geldings still act like jerks around mares. Yeah, so like, right. It's a thing. So I'm really glad you guys do that. That gives me a lot of heart.
We really honor the social dynamics. We let these horses figure out who, you know, how they want to organize themselves and who they want to hang out with. And but I'll tell you, the strongest leaders and the biggest bands are led by older mares. So we have some, you know, sort of high profile, flashy stallions that lead bands, but geldings. We have two mares. Yes. Geldings. Geldings that were once stallions, yeah. But we have two mares. One is named Desiree. The other one's name is Vega, and they are both middle-aged mares, and they
strippers.
They lead the two.
That is stripper names.
That's funny. They lead the two biggest bands. I mean, Vega's band is like 22 horses. Desiree's band is like 27, and it's really amazing. You know, the leadership that these mares. You know, just one low knicker, and everyone's head is up, and they're like, "Oh, where's Boss Queen going now?" Okay, everyone fall in line and off they go. So we have some bands that are led by the males and some that are led by the females.
Do you have a couple of stories that really stick with you about a couple of the horses that are out there?
I would probably start with our most famous horse. His name is Michelangelo, beautiful chestnut pinto that came from the Sandwash Basin herd management area, which is just about 30 miles northwest of here. The Sandwash Basin is one of the most popular herds in the United States, you know, famous for the legendary Picasso, who was once called the most famous Mustang in America. Picasso was this beautiful bay pinto stallion who, you know, lived well into his 20s. Michelangelo is his grandson. And, you know, so a lot of people who come to the Wild Horse Refuge, they want to see Michelangelo because he is a connection to Picasso. Michelangelo travels with four mares. They, you know, they're a very instantly recognizable band because they're very splashy and colorful. But I would say he's probably our most famous celebrity here at the Wild Horse Refuge. But there were there's two other horses that really kind of just recently have really amazing stories. The first is a big gray Sandwash Basin mare named Detatse. And someone spotted her in a kill pen in Tennessee. She had a USDA slaughter tag on her rump, and she was waiting to ship to Mexico to be, you know, slaughtered and butchered. And someone recognized her neck brand. They saw her online, and a wonderful advocacy group called the Sandwash Wild Horse Advocate Team, who they are a group of volunteers who monitor the horses of Sandwash Basin. They help with fertility control and other things, but they actually paid to get Detatse out of the kill pen. They quarantined her in Oklahoma, and then they transported her here to the Wild Horse Refuge. And she spent, you know, about 3 months in our corral. She was very underweight, but she had obviously never been handled. She was rounded up in 2021 at the big roundup that happened here in 2021, and someone adopted her. And we don't know how she ended up in a kill pen, but she had never obviously been handled. She was very underweight. And we got her healthy, put some weight on her, and turned her out just a couple of weeks ago. In fact, while I was at Equine Affair in Ohio, and she has joined up with a band up in the northern part of the refuge, and is, you know, we went out and just saw her a couple of days ago, and she obviously just loves being back out on the range. And you know, this must feel like a homecoming to De Tatse, because we are very close to the Sandwash Basin. So the climate is the same. The topography is the same. And I, you know, I saw the video of her being turned out, and just, you know, when it finally occurred to her that, oh my gosh, this is real, I'm actually free again. Those are the moments that you live for out here. Those moments when these horses, aww, many of whom have spent, you know, the past few years just standing in government corrals, get turned back out onto the open range, and you kind of see it in their eyes, the realization that their freedom has been restored. It makes everything worthwhile. And the other story I would say is a guy named Pistol. Pistol came from the Piance East Douglas herd management area, which is a very wild herd here in Colorado. He was rounded up, I think, 3 years ago. A very, very nice lady adopted him. You know, he was a middle-aged stallion when he was rounded up. He had a band. He was, you know, he was a wild Mustang. And this nice lady spent 2 years working with Pistol every single day. And he just wasn't having it. And then she brought in trainers, and they were like, there's no getting through to this guy. He just didn't want anything to do with people. And he made that very clear every single day. So she reached out to us, and because he was born here in Colorado, and, you know, and we wanted to restore his freedom, since, you know, being with people just wasn't his gig. And he spent, you know, several weeks with De Tatse, and the two of them were actually turned out together, and seeing them, you know, race off together across the open range through the sagebrush, yay, back to a free roaming life was, you know, they're very inspiring moments. And I think they really kind of underscore why what we're doing is so important. You know, we are restoring freedom for these animals and making sure that they get out of government holding, making sure that they don't fall into the wrong hands, and instead giving them the life that, you know, that they once had.
Well, you guys.
Okay. I'm sorry, Glenn. I'm so inspired by this. This is exactly what just needs to be done for these Mustangs. What a gift it is that you're able to do that. I don't know how, but that's a whole nother show. I guess, you know, really, what are some of the biggest challenges you guys face? Is it money? Is it space? Is it government? What is it?
You know, I'd like to ring out a long list of things that are challenging for us, but, you know, it's sort of like, for me, it's an example of when you do the right thing, everything in the universe sort of comes together and allows it to happen. I mean, sure, we have, you know, we have things that we have to deal with. We suffered a fire in late January of our shop and lost a lot of equipment. And, you know, we've been recovering from that. So, you know, things happen along the way. But, you know, honestly, you know, our hands-off approach, the fact that we let these horses just go back out to the wild. I mean, you know, we provide care for them when needed, but for the most part, like I said, they're Mustangs, so they know how to thrive and survive out there. And, you know, the other point that I think needs to be made is that we are saving the American taxpayers millions of dollars. I spent last week on Capitol Hill meeting with members of Congress with a very simple message that the Wild Horse Refuge exists, that it deserves support, and that we are saving American taxpayers millions of dollars by taking these horses off the government's hands. You know, the Bureau of Land Management estimates that it costs $50,000 to support an unadopted wild horse over the course of its life. So you do the math, you know, $50,000 for, you know, per 250 horses, you know, that translates into major tax savings for the taxpayers. And so, you know, my message to these members of Congress was just, you know, this is work that we're doing. We are an example of a humane and cost-effective alternative to government holding, which is very expensive. It takes up something like 85% of the BLM's wild horse and burro program budget. And so by taking these horses off the BLM's hands and letting them live here, we're helping those horses first and foremost. And that's really the heart of our mission. But we are also, you know, saving taxpayers a lot of money.
Well, Scott, how can people visit you? Can they visit you? Can they get a tour? It must be so cool watching the different bands run around the countryside. Can they do that?
I giving tours is probably one of my favorite parts of this job. I love taking people out there because it just blows your mind. You go out there and you see these horses living wild and free, but we are also home to hundreds of mule deer, hundreds of pronghorn. We have elk, we have coyotes, we have, you know, the occasional mountain lion that comes through. We have golden eagles, bald eagles, jackrabbits, prairie dogs, ground squirrels. It's just, it's a thriving ecosystem. We're very careful to make sure that the habitat stays healthy, that our operation is sustainable, and that, you know, that this is a refuge for the wild horses, but also for all the other wild critters that live here. So that's a big part of what people see when they come for a tour. So we are not open to the public. In other words, you can't just, you know, come here and have a tour. What we like to do is give tours to those who donate to the Wild Horse Refuge. And we have a program where you donate the equivalent of the purchase price of 1 acre of land, which is $777. And that makes you a founding donor, and that entitles you to a VIP tour of the Wild Horse Refuge, and it entitles you to merchandise and other benefits. But we have a founding donors event coming up in September when all of those founding donors will come together and we will give them tours. And then we also we are having an open house for the Craig, Colorado Chamber of Commerce. And then the day after that, an open house for anyone in Craig that wants to come. And it's just an opportunity for us to showcase what we're doing here and let people, especially that live here in the community, have a look at what we're doing. And you know, we're very excited about that.
Hey, Scott, hang on 1 second. Hey, Chad, honey, we're buying land in Colorado. Okay. It'll be fine. It's going to be great.
It's wildhorserefuge.org is where you can find Scott.
Oh, what a beautiful website, too. Wow.
Yeah, it is neat. Well, thanks, Scott, for joining us. We really appreciate it. If you want to find more details and if you, too, want to become a founding member, wildhorserefuge.org.
Attention horse owners, if your horse is feeling the pressure from travel, training, or competition, well, it's because stress can wreak havoc on gut health, behavior, and performance. And I'm going to tell you a little story about that when I'm done reading this. But Poseidon Animal Health has veterinarian recommended supplements to keep your horse feeling their best. They've created stress paste, vet recommended and scientifically formulated to support your horse from the inside out during times of acute stress. And if you pair it with Digestive HP and their full gut health reset pack, it offers daily support for your horse's whole GI tract, designed to support the microbiome and protect your horse from the inside where stress hits its hardest. So Glenn, Cal and Sterling both came for training this month from one of our awesome listeners. And Cal came, and he's a 3-year-old warm blood, and he came here to be started. Well, he shipped quite a ways to get here. And so when he got here, I noticed with just a couple of days, he quit eating. And apparently he's a huge fan of food, but he quit eating. Well, I think that he has never been off his farm, and he came down and got into some trouble gut health wise. And so they started him on omeprazole and finished that treatment. But I've now got him on the Digestive HP as well, and the stress paste on some of the days where we're like gonna like get to it, because we're riding him beautifully now. But I'm like, you have to eat food. So he's now like licking the bowl clean.
Oh, wow.
And I took all his supplements out, and it's just his food and the Digestive HP. And so I'm like, this stuff is awesome. the stuff is awesome. I'm really, really happy with it. Cause even though we're done with the omeprazole, this is going to, he's going to just stay on this and it's just so good for his gut. Poseidonal Animal Health products are trusted worldwide by Olympic athletes. And other people. Give your horse the same champion treatment. Visit PoseidonAnimalHealth.com today. Well, this Horse Health Report is brought to you by Daily Dose Equine Non-GMO Core Nutrition for horses and ponies of all ages. I would like to welcome to the show Jessica. She is the Chief Science Officer for Spalding Labs. Spalding Labs, of course, you guys hear that and you're like, the fly predators. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good. I'm so glad to talk to you because fly predators have been a part of my life for, I mean, since I lived in Arizona and here too, it's just something that it's just a must have for the summer and spring, summer and fall here in Oklahoma, especially. And I even have, when I first moved here, I didn't re-up my fly preds because I didn't really have a situation for them. And then I regretted it. And they're a part of our farm for sure. They're like getting my little friends in the mail. I always talk about my little friends are in the mail. Hold on. I got to go to the mailbox. So Jessica, tell everybody a little bit about, for those who don't know, what fly predators are.
So fly predators are a little beneficial insect that you sprinkle around usually about once a month, and they will kill flies before they become adults. They don't bother people or animals. So you just do your monthly fly control just by kind of walking around your pastures and sprinkling a little bit out any place that you've got manure or any kind of decaying vegetation, and they'll kill the flies before they become adults.
Yeah, so they burrow into the fly eggs and eat them. Is that right?
Yeah, technically the cocoon or the pupal stage of the fly is where they're going to kill them. They're going to eat some of them and they're going to lay eggs in others and let their babies grow up and eat that fly and kill it that way. So that you've always got kind of some maintaining a low level of natural kind of population. And then essentially, our program is just forcing that natural population to stay high enough to keep human happy fly control instead of nature happy fly control.
So how come we can't just have fly predators take over like flies did?
Mainly because they're very obligate on flies. So they can't reproduce without flies. They don't really feed on anything other than flies. So if there's not enough flies in the environment, their populations will just die off. And in fact, even if they start coming across where there's fewer flies that the females are finding, they'll purposely lay fewer eggs so they can always ensure that there's going to be flies for their offspring. So for us to counteract that and make sure that there's few enough flies to make us happy, that's why we kind of do regular releases to make sure that we force their population to stay really high.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, that's sad.
They're eating their own babies.
Yeah. Right? Yep. They've got to ensure a future for their young.
Oh my gosh. That's so crazy. So some of our listeners had some questions about the fly predators. So let's start with Melissa had, do I need to adjust the number I buy based on my climate?
Not so much the number generally. It kind of depends. People that are in really humid areas or get a lot of rain in the summer when it's hot, generally we recommend that they stay more like on an every 3 week schedule instead of every 4 weeks or monthly. And if you're, you know, in a really wet area that's also got high humidity, you might want to increase your numbers a little bit. But generally, the numbers that we go based on animals is pretty good. And the calculator on our website will kind of also give you an optimal schedule, just kind of based on your zip code.
Gotcha. Okay, Carol wants to know, how well do they work if you only have one horse? Is that enough for fly preds?
So for that, it kind of depends. If you have flies with that one horse, most likely the fly predators are going to work for you because we're not really looking. It kind of depends if there's enough for flies to breed in there. So whether you have a manure pile or they have kind of favorite bathroom spots where maybe the manure gets scattered and you can't get it all. If there's enough manure there to breed flies, then fly predators are definitely worth it. If you have like one horse in, say, a boarding stable of 40 horses and everybody's not doing it, then it's not going to work so well, just because flies will travel up to a quarter of a mile. So you always kind of have to look at your surroundings and think, okay, what's within about a quarter mile of me? If there's a dairy across the street and you have one horse, I'm going to say it's not going to give you the best results. But if you just have, you know, a handful of other horses within a quarter of a mile of you and not a lot else or just fields, then fly predators with one horse is absolutely going to work.
I love the fact that you said they travel about a quarter of a mile, because one of my favorite games is trapping flies in my car and then driving like 2 miles and getting them out. And I'm like, ha, suck it. You don't know where you are. You're lost. Sorry, that's just me being crazy. Okay, Wendy, this is a problem that I've had to deal with too. Wendy wants to know, how do I stop my chickens from eating them? I mean, it's like watching your chickens eat your babies. It's so sad. And can they be used with free range chickens?
Absolutely. We actually have about 15. I had to think about that. We used to have 20, but thanks to some hawks, we are down to about 15 of our free range chickens. And what we do is we use release stations. So I have some window screen that I just kind of made little envelopes out of that I hang them in. And within our coop where our litter bedding is, I hang a bag in there. And then I kind of watch where they free range as far as our horse pastures go. And kind of as far out as the chickens go, we use release stations. And then when we get out in the pastures far enough out where the chickens aren't ever getting that far out, then we just go back to sprinkling them on the ground. And we do have like PDF files of that I had made of how I make my traps. So if anyone is interested, or sorry, not traps, but release stations. So if anyone is interested in, you know, getting a copy of that, they can call us or email us at any time. And we're happy to send over like a PDF of how we've made our homemade release stations.
I love that. Make like a little screen envelope and then there they go.
It's
that's cool.
Just enough because it holds those fly pupa away from the chickens, and that's what they're really going after. Once the fly predators have hatched, because they're so small and they disperse so much, the chickens just really aren't much of a bother to them. So it's just protecting those fly pupa.
So say I've got like a fly control, like, okay. So like I fly spray my horses before I ride and I maybe fly spray the barn out. Is that going to hurt my little predators?
Not at all. Any kind of on animal or premise type spray, as long as you're not spraying directly where you're releasing fly predators, it's not an issue at all. I know like a lot of mosquito district spray and things like that, we get that question a lot, but a lot of those sprays are meant to just be on foliage and vegetation, or if you're doing a premise spray in the barn, like on the walls. Fly predators just don't fly that well, so they're not really going to come into contact with any of those kind of premise type sprays or on animal sprays. So as long as you're not spraying, you know, directly over where you're releasing them, you're pretty good to go.
Oh, your little challenged fly predators. They don't fly very well.
They don't fly very well. They are made to burrow.
So if we put them on the ground, we're like, do they help with horse flies?
Unfortunately not. They don't help with any of the water breeding flies like mosquitoes, midges, and horse flies. They're really specific just on kind of house flies and biting stable flies. So kind of flies you see on the face and flies that you see on their legs.
Okay, well, we're going to have to start injecting steroids into the pupa to get them to get the damn horse flies. Good Lord.
You are the chief science officer. You think genetics would, you need to have little genetic vials so that you can something with
come
these guys and make
on,
them
get it.
And could you make them taste really hot, like hot like chili, so the chickens don't like them? I mean, that'd be perfect.
Make them spicy.
Yeah, you need to get back to the lab there, Jessica. You need to,
Jessica, we've got big ideas for you. Okay, so Patty wants to know, she says, my manure compost pile is about 200 feet from my barn. My horses tend to poop around the barn, but I pick it up daily. Where is it best to leave the fly predators in that situation?
This is exactly our situation. I'm so interested to hear your answer.
So typically we want to do small amounts in lots of areas. So even if you're picking up daily, if there's any kind of grass or gravel or the horses are going to walk through it where there's bits and pieces that you just can't get picked up with a fork, you're going to want to sprinkle some fly predators still in those general areas and then also around the compost pile. You know, kind of the amount you want to spread in each. If your compost pile gets really hot and it's steaming all the time, you don't need a lot of fly predators around it, because as when it's hot composting like that, you'll pretty much kill most flies developing in it. So just a little bit around the edges, but you'll end up getting actually a little bit more fly breeding in any areas where there's more concentrated manure, especially if it's a place they've walked through it. For my horses, that's by the gate, where it doesn't matter how fast we get out there. Like, at some point, somebody's going to walk through it before we're out there to clean up. And that kind of creates this layer of moisture underneath where you actually can get a lot of fly breeding in those areas, even when you're picking up manure all the time. So I try to hit those a little bit harder and then a little bit less around our manure pile. If it's really hot, if we've just taken it out and I'm just restarting it again, I'll treat a little bit heavier around it and a little bit less in my dry lots.
So last question before we let you go, and this has been super interesting. So we get these shipments, basically it's a little box and they come in the mail and it's like, you know, like I said, it's like my little babies have arrived. And so I go to the mailbox and I go and get them. They haven't hatched in the packet and you wait for them to hatch. You know, you wait to see a couple of them crawling around before you then open them up. Mm-hmm. But what if it's like summertime and your mailbox is always dark color and I'm so worried that I'm going to toast my little friends. So do I need to quickly get them out of the mailbox? Is the warmth good for them? How does that work?
You don't, if the mailbox is likely getting over like 120 degrees inside, which in the heat of the summer, it can kind of turn into that cook box. It's best to get them out as soon as possible. If it's going to be a while, like if you're working and your mail comes middle of the day, you know, if you've got a good mail carrier, we are happy to have, we can add a line on your shipping label that kind of says, you know, leave on porch or leave in the shade if you've got kind of a designated area. So we can definitely do something like that to help you so that they can put it maybe somewhere other than the mailbox if it's going to be there more than 4 hours.
Gotcha. All right. Well, Jessica, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more and go make their orders? Because it's time, people.
It is SpaldingLabs.com. And if they're listening here on the show, they can use code HRN10 to get 10% off their order as well. And we'd be happy to have anybody come to the website. And they can always also give us a call at 888-562-4552.
Oh my gosh, you guys, there's a coupon code. It's like they're free. Oh my God. Yay. All right, Jessica, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again very soon.
All right. Thank you for having me. Have a good day, guys.
Non-GMO whole food nutrition is the basis of the entire Daily Dose Equine program. We never forget that natural is better and simplicity is key. Daily Dose Equine uses non-GMO whole food ingredients like alfalfa, timothy, peas, sunflower seeds, and flax. Daily Dose Equine doesn't use fillers, bulking agents, or leftovers from other industries, so you can feed less yet improve body condition and energy. And our feeds are free from chemical residues and glyphosate. Find the perfect formulation for your horse at dailydoseequine.com. Select Daily Dose Equine formulations are available nationwide through Chewy.com and TractorSupply.com.
Time to learn why some days you're embarrassed to be part of the human race in Jamie's Weird News.
That's right. These are actual real stories that people have emailed me. And if you're looking through the news and you're like, oh my God, that's so weird, email it to weirdnews@horseradio.com. Yeah, horseradionetwork.com, right? Was that the email? I don't know. People send it to everything. Glenn has to forward them to me. So weirdnews@horseradionetwork.com.
Yes.
Okay, that's it. Now, this week we had, I think, almost a record number for 1 week, Glenn. Lots of weird stuff happening. Michelle, Delia, Glenn, Stephanie, Laureen, Carrie, Shelley, Janelle, Chantel, Nicole, Cynthia, Alyssa, Rosemary, and Laurie.
Oh my
Yay!
God.
that's a lot of weird news. A lot of weird stuff happening. So I have to, Glenn only lets me do four, so I have to pick out four. And we're going to start in the UK. We're going to go to Europe because a UK man was just arrested. And why was he arrested? He was sitting at home and he's 26 years old. His name is James Brown, not the singer, James Brown from Northumberland in the UK. So his house caught on fire. So there was like some of the electrical box near his bed, and the electrical box like sparked and caught his bed sheets on fire. So firefighters are dispatched to the house and they put out the fire. And apparently he's like super excited when they arrived and was like watching and like just really, really excited about watching the firefighters put out the fire. So they actually unplug the electric box. They're like, you're going to have no power for a while until you can figure out why it was on fire. So all firefighters leave. Well, that evening, the fire brigade again, once again, rushed to his house to put out the bedding in his room that caught fire. And they asked James, why do you think this caught fire? And he was like, must have been the electricity meter. And they were like, we unplugged that. So they started to suspect that maybe it had been started deliberately. According to their records, they went through and let's see. He pleaded guilty to 2 counts of arson because he has called the fire department 80 times in the last 12 months.
Is he lonely? What's that?
Apparently, Glenn, he has tried to become a firefighter and did not get the job and is obsessed with men putting out fires in his house. That's just weird, right?
Just weird. Arson's nothing to sneeze at either. That's a jail term there.
That is, he was arrested. He was sentenced to 8 months suspended sentence in 2 years with 150 hours of community service.
At the fire department? Cleaning the trucks?
Oh my God, wouldn't that be his dream come true? He is currently, quote, seeking help for his obsession. That's right. He basically, they said here, the quote is, You have said in an ideal world, you would be a firefighter and you have a longstanding interest in fire service. It's clearly an obsession. Your primary interest seems to be contacting the fire service after setting fires and you're wasting resources.
Not to mention it could be dangerous.
There's that too. Hey, that's why we call it weird news. Okay. And we're going to stay in the UK right now. No, we're going to go to New York. Do you know Thomas the Train is, right?
Thomas actually at Strasbourg one time when we were at the train place.
Well, in New York, there was a woman who was speeding on I-95 North, and she was going 102 miles an hour is what she was clocked at, and then pulled over. And you're thinking, what does this have to do with Thomas the Train? Well, she was pulled over, and there was a 2-year-old boy in her car, and they pull her over. She's like, I can't. I gotta go. And she's like, they're like, ma'am, what are you in such a hurry for? She was running late to the Thomas the Train event in Essex.
Her 2-year-old was going to scream about it if she didn't get there.
I mean, she's in a hurry. She was charged with reckless driving, reckless endangerment and injury, risk of injury to a minor and failure to stop on the correct side of the road. So she did all sorts of things wrong. And so I'm assuming that they did not go spend some time with Thomas the Train.
Poor Thomas. Poor kid. Not his fault.
Now, I kept this one in because this is familiar to me, and I guess it's the not that
2-foot snake.
No. This happened in Kentucky, in Lexington, actually. A Kentucky mom was in for a surprise when she got home from work. She parks a car and goes up to the front door to unlock the door, and she sees 27 boxes. Now, like, think like big, giant Costco diaper boxes. Okay. 27 of them that I can see on her front porch. And inside them, dum-dum lollipops.
27
her child,
boxes?
Her child took her phone and ordered 70,000 dum-dum lollipops to her house. That's 30 cases. So my math was off. My accounting was off. 30 cases of Dum Dum lollipops. Okay. So each case had 2,340 suckers inside, retailing for $130 a piece. The final cost of the Dum Dum lollipops that her son ordered, $4,200.
Oh my
so
God.
She contacts Amazon. She's like, we have a problem. My son ordered lollipops and he's like in first grade. They would only let her return 8 of the 30 boxes. So she was left with 22 giant boxes of lollipops. So she's a resourceful gal. She goes on Facebook Marketplace and she's like, help. She sold every one of those boxes of lollipops because of Facebook Marketplace. Do you remember when my son bought
$4,000 of lollipops?
Yeah. I got an email saying that, because when your kid's like two and you're trying to get something done, you just hand him your phone. My son bought $400 worth of the local barbecue joint gift certificates. Like,
well, that's very random. That is so random.
He went on Groupon and was on Groupon, just started clicking through and bought $400 worth of coupons to a local barbecue place. And so I had to call Groupon and I was like, my son did this and I don't even eat meat. I'm a vegetarian. I would not have bought $400 worth of barbecue. And they were like, you know what they said? Happens all the time. It's fine. Take it up.
Is Groupon still a thing?
I don't know. I mean, he was little at the time, but I think it is. Yeah.
I haven't heard that name in a long time. Groupon used to be such a big thing. You remember, it was a huge thing. It was pre-Facebook even, I think, Groupon.
Whenever I go somewhere, I travel somewhere, I use Groupon at that place. Really? Because it'll give you some deal. Yeah, if you're on a vacation, just open Groupon when you get there and it'll show you a bunch of local stuff you can do for cheap.
Because I'm going to Dallas for AHP and we're going to have the dinner. I'll have to look.
It's not as exotic as like Hawaii, but sure, go ahead.
I forgot about Groupon. Wow. Last so you didn't have to eat $400 worth of barbecue?
No, they refunded my money and told me how to password protect it.
All right, next one.
Yep. Let me start out this by saying drugs are bad. Don't do drugs. Drugs are terrible.
So we're going to Florida?
No, we're going to go to Ohio, the other crazy place. An Akron, Ohio woman was arrested. The officers got behind her and they're like, oh, that car has a active warrant and the owner of the car has a suspended driver's license. So they pull her over. And they got 55-year-old Victoria Vidal was detained without incident. They pull her out of the car. They're like, you're under arrest because you have no driver's license. You're a lot of charges that she was guilty of. And now there is video of this and the car. And if you look at the video in the car, it is like trash. You know, there's just trash. Like how she even was able to hit the gas pedal, I don't know. It's just garbage all in this. And the officers look over and they're like, oh, hey, buddy. Kiki, come here. There is a raccoon sitting on the passenger seat.
Oh, no.
Of her car, like shotgun, like riding shotgun. And they're like, hey, buddy, what is that you have? What is that in your mouth? What are you doing? And the raccoon was sucking on a crack pipe.
He's a stoned raccoon.
Chewy, the raccoon, was sitting in the passenger seat with meth pipe in its mouth. They were like, can you come here? Can you come here? So they're able to get Chewy, who was, I guess, pretty friendly.
Was he a pet raccoon or was he just hanging out in her dirty car?
You know, he had a name, so it could have started as a hanging out in the car full of garbage, and then she became friends with it, or I don't know which one came first. Now, apparently, the officer says, Chewy had somehow gotten hold of a glass methamphetamine pipe, leading officers to further inspect the vehicle. They did find a bulk amount of meth, crack cocaine, a bunch of meth pipes, just all the things. But Chewy is okay. What we're saying is he could pass a drug test. It was an empty pipe. He just happened to be like, that is the biggest narc I have ever seen. Be like, look what my mom has.
You know, I was thinking about rehab for, you know, do they have rehab for raccoons?
It turns out he has been taken to a sanctuary and he is getting the help he needs.
That's funny. All right. Is that it?
That's it, everybody. Thank you for sending me me your weird news stories. If you are ever reading the news and you're like, that's super weird, like a crack pipe smoking raccoon or something, like, or a snake biting your butt when you're peeing outside, send it to weirdnews@horseradionetwork.com.
And of course, we have the NRHA happening tomorrow on the show. And then Friday is Really Bad Ads. We have a new set of prizes too, which we'll go over. So get your ads into Jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. It's best now to just do a screenshot of the ad rather than sending a link, because by the time Jennifer gets there, it's gone or taken down or
somebody's reported it.
Yeah. Or some Facebook page she does not want to join. So definitely take a screenshot. That's the best way to do that. Thank you all for joining us. Hang on for a post show. We're going to talk a little bit about how non-horse people view the Kentucky Derby right after we do this.